Voices in Time, recording life stories.
Okay, today's May 24th, 2011. We're back with Anne, and we'll pick back up.
Okay. I drove into the driveway one afternoon, and school had already been out, and Joe was in the back driveway playing basketball with one of his biology teacher, and I thought, uh-oh, what's going on here? I've never seen, never had a teacher here before like that. So I soon found out because I took some groceries into the kitchen, looked out the window, and there were chickens running around the backyard. Well, they had been experimenting in Rocker's biology lab with chickens, and they didn't know what to do with them, so Joe volunteered to bring them home to our house. Isn't that great? Well, I didn't go out of the house through the back door all summer long because there was chicken shit everywhere. And
how many chickens did he bring
20. Home? He brought 20 home. There was 20 in the class, so each one had their own chicken. Well, anyway, that summer when we went to the beach, we never had had a key to the house since the first week we moved in because I locked the door three nights, and three nights we locked people out, so we didn't use the keys after that and lost them somewhere along the way. Who knows where they ended up? And so we decided that Gary would stay at the house while we were gone. Well, one night he came in late, like about 1:30, and met a guy carrying our typewriter out. And so he thought, well, you know, there might be other people in the house up on the third floor or something. So he called the police. And this policeman drove down the street real quietly without a siren on, so he wouldn't let anybody know if they were around that he was around. And he came in, and Gary said they were talking in the center hall. Gary was telling him what had happened, and all of a sudden, this siren comes flaring down the street, and this female cop got out. It came into the center hall, and she started, Gary said she thought she was big stuff, and she started telling the other policeman what to do, and so she said, you go upstairs to the third floor and check up there, and then the second floor, and then come on back, and I'll go out in the backyard and check the outside. So Gary said she no longer got out the door, and she comes running back in with her gun drawn and her eyes really huge. She says, I'm being attacked by chickens. So anyway, when we went to the beach, Vince tells Amy stories about on the beach, and she says they spend lots of times laughing about it, things that happen, but she gets grossed out when we tell her that we used milk cartons for the boys to pee in in the car, because if we stopped every time somebody wanted to do that, we would never gotten there. And but one night, about 2 a.m., we stopped at a service station, and I went into the restroom, and there was a woman, I never will forget this, it's really stuck in my mind, who was in there crying, sobbing her eyes out. And I went over to her, and I put my arms around her, and I said, can you tell me what's wrong? And she said, he just used me, and then he left me here at the truck stop, you know. She says, nobody loves me, and she started, you know, we started talking, and I told her, I said, yes, somebody does love you. I says, Jesus loves you, and don't you ever forget that. And so I talked to her for a little bit, and I've always wondered whatever happened to her. But you never know, what's going to happen. The little boys took a trolley down to the market one time and brought back a rooster on the trolley. They would never let them put a chicken on a public service vehicle nowadays, but at that time they did. And so that little rooster started taking over the backyard, and he would wake the neighbors up, and people were complaining, but I was vice president of the Homes Association that year, so they didn't say much at the meeting. But the neighbor behind us, they were pals with Yellow Freight, and she came over and she says, this rooster is waking us up, every morning. She was talking to Bill, and Bill says, well, you'll have to talk to little Teddy over there. That's his rooster. And she got halfway over and looked at him, and she says, oh, heck. And she just turned around and went back home.
And then, so was the rooster there at the same time as the chickens? How long did the chickens last?
Well, they lasted all summer, but they started dying off or escaping. I don't know. It just seems, we never did really do anything to get rid of them. It just seems like one by one, they started going. I don't think they liked our backyard. But anyway, we had a pen in the backyard for a rabbit. We had a big rabbit. And the pen was big enough that there was a bushel basket turned upside down in the middle of the pen. And the rabbit would sit up on top of the bushel basket a lot. Well, the little boys on the way home from visitation found a duck at Loose Park Lake, because the park department had come and picked up all the ducks to take to the zoo for the winter, and they left this one lone duck. So they brought the duck home and they put it in the pen with the rabbit. Well, Nick came home from Rockers, and he went out the back door, and the rabbit was sitting on top of the bushel basket. And the duck was behind the bushel basket. Nick didn't know it was there, and the duck started quacking. And I'd never seen such a surprised look on anybody's face in my life, because he looked over and he thought that the rabbit was quacking. And we had, it was so funny. Anyway, then the next year, during the year, I think it was in about springtime during March, my husband's sister, Martha, she was single, and she had bought a house 6 years earlier than the story that I'm talking about. And it was 5-bedroom, 3-bath home. And everybody said, Martha, why are you buying a house so big? She said, oh, I'm just going to have all my friends down. Well, she had 6 years of that. And she decided to sell it because she was going to build a condo in Overland Park. Well, Bill was on the bank board at that time. And the president of the bank called Bill, and he says, your sister Martha's here wanting some money for her home. To build a condo in Overland Park. Well, Bill had asked Martha about a month earlier how much he was asking for the house there. We didn't need another house because we had that house on Westover. And he was just asking off the cuff. And Martha told him, and he said, Martha, that's priced too high. He said, I wouldn't pay you more than such and such a price for that. And so Kenny, the guy that I called Bill, said, Martha says you're going to buy her lake house. And name the price. Bill had told her, you know, he wouldn't buy it for any more. And Bill said he couldn't call Martha a liar, you know, because, and she needed the money to go with the condo. So Bill says, okay, yes. And he came home and he told me, and he says, we have to pray that she sells that house by April, because if she doesn't, it's ours. And I said, what in the world are we going to do with another house, you know? Well, she didn't sell it. So she came over one day, and I took three notes of everything. I had three sheets of paper on both sides with all kinds of every, you know, all information on it. And Bill had told her, he says, Martha, don't you touch one thing in that house. He says, the boat, the furniture, everything goes as it is right now, goes with that house. And so she agreed to it. Well, the boat had been up on the lift for 2 years. And Bill said, you just take the boys down there and we'll keep the for sale sign up and you can use it, you know, until it sells. So I had a friend that has a 16-year-old boy, and she drove down there with us the first time with her son. And Bill was so busy at work with, there was some stuff going on at work that he was getting up early in the morning and working late at night. So I took all the little boys down there. The older kids were going to school, and they couldn't really, you know, they were really busy, couldn't get away. And I took my instructions about how to, the battery was hooked up in the laundry room. So I took the instructions down and held the instructions in one hand, and we got the battery inserted in the boat, I had never driven a boat before. And so we got into the boat and I backed it out of the dock. We got the lift down finally after a while. And we backed the boat out, and remember I kept reaching for the pedal, the brake pedal on the boat, you know. And so we tried it out, and we had to go get gas in it. And so when I went, it seemed like there's a lot, you know, a lot of exhaust coming out of the back and everything. So when I got to the station on the lake, I asked the guy if he knew of someone who would check out my boat, you know, some station on the lake that would check out my boat before the teenagers came down. And so he says, well, I know someone who goes around in his own boat. He goes around to the docks and he'll check it out for you. So he gave me his number, and I went home and I called the guy, and he said, okay, I'd be happy to come by. He said, tell me where you are. And I held that phone in my hand, and I thought a minute. On another minute and another minute, and I said, you know what? I'm going to have to call you back because I don't know where I am. And he just laughed, you know. So I went around to the houses, and it was a weekday. There wasn't anybody there because I wanted them to tell me how to get there by boat, you know, on the water. And so I finally took the number off the for sale sign and called the for sale, called the sales office. And I said, I'm at Martha Hodes's lake house. Can you tell me how to get here by boat? So they did, and I called them back. So from that time on, I knew where I was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we had so much fun, the boys, and I would take them out all day long on that boat, and they all learned how to. I had watched others, you know, get people up on their skis and how to, you know, turn around and what when somebody dropped in the water. And so we just had more fun. And we had this older couple next door to us up on the second. We were on the first tier. They were on the second tier and over a little ways. And they loved the boys. And he was sort of a, I wouldn't know how to describe him. He was just sort of cut and dry, you know, and he would tease the boys in a funny way, you know. So we come in the evening, in the afternoon, and he'd say, come down, and he'd say, okay, time for your drink. You've had enough of these boys for the day. So I would go up and sit on their deck in front of their place, and he would give me bourbon and Coke, and I swear there was more bourbon than there was Coke in it. Then I'd go back down, and I'd say, tell the boys, you don't want much dinner tonight, do you? But it was that lake house was my savior. You know, we had the boys down there. Oh, I forgot to tell you, the boys and I finally took the for sale sign off the tree. And we had it for 20 years. And I took the boys down there during the week and then brought them home for the weekend. And it worked out great because it wasn't crowded down there. And then, you know, we always had neighborhood kids, other kids at our house all the time. I knew where the boys were down at the lake. I knew what they were doing, and most of the time. And we just had a great time. And I would get up at 5 a.m. and go out on the deck, and I really grew there spiritually. You know, I go out and pray, and the nature, just being in the nature. It was quiet, and the birds would sing, and you know, I just look at the little bugs and think, oh, how even beautiful these bugs are, you know, the little colors on it, I was drawn to the Psalms and learned a lot about the Psalms in the Bible, and then when you know, wintertime came along and no one was using the place, I would go down there couple times a year and just fast and pray. And it was just like a R&R for me. I just loved it. And at night, you know, after the boys would go to bed, I'd take a little glass of wine in and crawl in bed and read, and it was just wonderful. It was just like a life savior. Mm-hmm. When we were there on weekends, the boys loved going to St. Patrick's because Father Barnett was there, and he was always trying to get the little boys to come up, and they would dress in the cassocks, and even though they hadn't made their first communion or been trained as servers, he would still invite them up. And they thought they were so big, you know, being up in front of everybody. The church was always crowded and everything. But when communion time came, Father Barnett, he always tried to give them communion to the ones that hadn't made it yet. And so Billy, he would always stick his tongue out, and I'd be sitting there in the congregation. You know, he would stick his tongue out and look sideways at me, and I would sit there and with my head shaking, no, no, you know. And so he wouldn't stick it out anymore. But one Sunday, he went ahead and received communion. And so I sat there and you know, he looked at me sort of, see, I, you know, did it anyway. And I was sort of mad, but by the time church was over with, I had made up my mind. I said, Billy, you just received First Communion. Now I don't have to go to any more classes. And so I went up the next day, took him up the next day to the church, and I got a First Communion certificate. So I said, oh, great, no more classes. So that ended that. And I remember one time, Lindy, you know, the place on weekends is always full of the kids' friends and everything. And Lindy brought a friend down from school. And we went over to the place where you catch trout. It was a trout farm or trout. You catch trout and bring it back home, cook it. So I remember the kid, I think we only did that twice, but this one time we had Lindy's friend with us, and we served the trout, and Bill cooked it. It still had the heads on it, and the kids collected the eyeballs. Ooh. And were throwing them back and forth at dinner time, they just sat there, shook their heads. The ones that didn't belong to us. And I remember we really got out of on the 4th of July one year. There was a fire next door to us on Westover, the roof. Yeah. And I thought, oh, thank God, we were at the Ozarks, because our boys probably would have been blamed. I don't know, it was just a wonderful, wonderful place. And I remember Jan went down one time with some girls, and she went, got over to Millstone on the boat, and she couldn't find her way back, so she had to call Mr. Haley next door, and he'd gotten his little rowboat, his little fishing boat, and went over and after him and guided him back home. I mean, just, you know, funny things. We just had such a ball. Mm-hmm. There, it was wonderful. But when we finally sold it, when the grandchildren started getting old enough to drive the boat, and Bill just had nightmares, you know, about accidents and everything. And so we sold it to Bev and Lil, who they had gone down and used it and loved it. And so they bought it from us, and I really thought I would miss it more than I do, but I really didn't, because we were always so busy. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have time to think about it. Another thing we did, we had a girls' weekend every year. All the boys' wives in our girls. And we would go down for the weekend. And we go down on Friday night and just talk and carry on. And then we get up early the next morning and go to the outlet place, mm-hmm. and spend all day at the outlet place. We'd have dinner at the Mexican restaurant. And then we come home and we would have show and tell. So everybody would show what they got that day. And then the next morning we would get up and go back to the outlet after church on the way home and get what we wanted, what the other ones got. They found a better deal than we did. So that was another thing that we did that was fun. We had some ski vacations when I was pregnant with, no, it was after I had had Billy. Bill took the four oldest skiing in Colorado and left me at home with the little kids, and I was nursing Billy. And a few months before that, a police dog had followed Jan home, and we couldn't find the owner, and It was his funny looking because the tail was cut off. I don't know how that had happened. But the police dog was very protective of the kids. And while the kids are out in front playing, an older man walked by and the police, he nipped at the guy. And I found out later the poor guy was out for a walk. He was just recuperating from a heart surgery. And I thought, oh, great, we'll probably get a lawsuit, but we didn't. But they had to take the dog to the vet, and I said, I don't want it back. I don't want the dog back if it's going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I said, amen to dogs. We've had enough dogs. You know, I don't want any more dogs. I was getting tired of all these animals, you know. I think it was right after we had another scare, you know, with Lainey. We called the dog Lainey because Jan's middle name was Elaine, and we just named that dog Lainey. But anyway, so then we took when the kids got a little older, we took the whole family to Colorado twice. And I remember one time, one of those trips, I don't know which one it was, but Billy was still pretty young. He was like 4 years old, we all took lessons the first day. I mean, it is awful getting those little kids, you know, all those skis, all the ski paraphernalia, mm-hmm. everything. And then Billy says, I never did know this, but Billy says, he remembers getting out of the car at the ski slope, and he told Bill, he says, I have to pee. And Bill says, okay. And Billy said, he did. His pants and went like that the rest of the day. But anyway, we took lessons. All took lessons. And it was a big joke afterwards. Big Bill, he got so much kidding because after our skiing lessons, he went down the slope and went right through a caution sign. And then the next day, or I don't know if it was the first or second day after that, I woke up. I had rolled over in the middle of the night, and I was so sore. I even hurt to roll over in bed. So Billy, the next morning, said, Mom, I've got an earache. And I said, oh, good, we can stay home. You and I get to stay home today. So anyway, those were fun trips. Mm-hmm. So, but, and the thing is, those little ones, you know, Bill and I would be going down the slope pretty cautious, and we were pretty cautious, and here comes the little one is just skiing right by us, you know. Jan, later on, worked for Frontier Airlines, and she worked in Salt Lake City, and we went up to Park City. Mm-hmm. So we actually had a trip up there later when she worked up there, and the kids were older. And Bill and I had tickets on the, because we're her parents, we had tickets on the plane. And so we just told the kids to drive out and meet us. And they had a big snowstorm. And Anne Marie was driving on the way out and went off the, I don't know whether it's on the way out or on the way back, but it was icy, and she went off the road, and they were stuck on the side of the road, and some guy came along and got them out, and they came back home, you know, got back home okay, mm-hmm. but that was scary, really scary for them. Anne Marie says, you know, she was saying, oh, we're all going to be killed, another thing we did for the kids when they were growing up was, as they graduated from high school, mainly some of them went before they graduated, we sent them on Outward Bound. And Lori was the first one to go, and she said she was the only girl on hers. And she said, if I got through later on in life, during hard times, she says, I look back on that and think, if I got through that, I can get through this. And then I remember when she came home, she had a date in all with her boyfriend. And she said all she wanted to do that night was go to a grocery store, and walk up and down the aisles and look at the food. Yeah. But we thought that was a good preparation for later on in life. And they all pretty much loved it. Amory went to, most of them went to Colorado, the mountains. But Amory went to Maine and went on a boat, sailboat. Lost kids. We seem like with big family, you always had, I told you about Billy, losing Billy on the way to the beach. Well, there were other times also. I remember the first time that happened, and Lindy didn't even know that it had happened, but we lived in Leawood, and at that time there were no buses or anything going out there. So I would have to pick Marcy up. She's the one that came to clean. Mm-hmm. I would have to pick her up on Ward Parkway, on 79th and Ward Parkway, and then take her back after she was finished. And the kids still talk about how they watched her put her hand cream on and in the car. For some reason, that stuck with them because she was take her tube of hand cream out and put hand cream on the way. But anyway, I got halfway there one afternoon and looked, and I thought, oh my gosh, Lindy's not in the car. And she was still really little. So we turned around and rushed back, and she was playing in the backyard and didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. But when I told Bill about it that night, he said, what kind of a mother are you anyway? So just wait. We lost Nick one time at Christ the King. We had gone into evening mass at Christ the King, and we got almost home and discovered Nick wasn't in the car. So all the girls start crying and carrying on all the way back to Christ the King, which wasn't that far. And we drove up, and he was just walking around outside, looking up at the top of the church, you know, like he was just no problem, you know. So then the biggie though was Bill would give their kids their allowance, 25 cents or so, you know, on Sundays. And then he'd take them up to the drugstore, and they would usually spend it on candy and gum or something like that. So one morning, Sunday morning, he took them up there, came back, and they were playing out in the front yard. And so I told one of the kids, it must have been about 2 hours later. It was 2 hours later. I told one of the kids to go out and bring Billy in so I could feed him lunch and put him down for a nap. Well, he came back and he said, Mom, I can't find Billy. Mm-hmm. And we looked in all the rooms upstairs. We looked in the car. We looked in the garage. We looked in the neighborhood. No Billy. And so I said to Bill, I said, do you remember him being in the car when you came home from the drugstore? And he said, well, come to think of it, I don't. So he jumped in the car and he went up to the drugstore on 63rd at Brookside. They said, well, we waited and nobody came to claim him, so we called the police. And so Bill had to go downtown to the police station and pick Billy up. Well, nowadays, we probably would have been taken in for child abandonment or something. But Bill said he walked into the police station, and Billy had his sweatshirt on that said Cookie Monster on the front of it. And he was sitting up on the on the desk entertaining the policeman, you know, and so yes, it was, Billy was, you know, he didn't even realize, I don't think, what was going on. Billy picked him up and brought him home. And then,
how old was he when that happened, do you think?
He must have been about going on 3, probably, okay. Somewhere around there. He was so still real old. Yeah. And then one night, I don't know why I couldn't go. It must have been after I had a baby or something. But the boys needed uniform pants. And so Bill was going to take them out to Penny's at Ward Parkway for uniform pants. And Emery wanted to go along. Well, she was about in fifth grade, I would say, fourth or fifth grade. So she jumped in the car with him and went out to Ward Parkway. And I guess it must have been about 45 minutes to an hour later, Emery called on the phone sobbing. Bill had left her. And he wasn't home. He didn't, you know, he hadn't come home. So I got in the car and went out and picked her up and brought her home before even Bill still wasn't home. And so he walked in the door, and they weren't able to find any pants out at Ward Parkway. So he had put the boys in the car and gone to pick us South. And she was over in the girls' department. He just left, you know, he left without her and didn't even realize it, that he had left her until after he got home. So, after we moved in to Westover, we had a birthday party for Bill's aunt, who turned 90 years old. And I remember she was in the library and everybody was gathered around her, and I, dumb me, I lit the candles in the kitchen before I got to the library. I should have lighted them in the library. But on the way through the center hall, the smoke alarm went off because I had put a full 90 candles on the cake. And then I have to tell you about the time I got some new dishes. All my dishes were pretty well broken that I'd gotten, you know, for my wedding and all that. So I was thinking I had to get some new dishes. Well, I saw this ad from Sears one night about the new dishes that were out. They were Corel dishes. So I went out to Sears at Metcalf South, and I asked the woman, the sales lady, I said, I want to see those new dishes that you advertised. So I looked at them and I thought, oh my gosh, these don't break, because it's going to be great, you know, because the kids are always breaking dishes. And so when she showed them to me, she took a cup and she said, watch. And she threw it on the floor and it didn't break. You know, I thought, oh my God, these are perfect. So I said, I want 2 sets. So I took them home, and the next morning, Bill came down to breakfast, and he says, oh, we have some new dishes. And I says, yeah, look. And I threw the cup on the floor, and it smashed to smithereens. Bill looked at me. He says, woman, what are you doing? And I said, what's it supposed to break? Needless to say, I took the cup back and got a new one. But we still have some of those dishes, a lot of those dishes. But that was such a shock when it broke. And we always had our chores for the kids posted on the refrigerator. And when each of the kids graduated from eighth grade, they started doing their own laundry. And it was really, you know, it was to teach them for when they went away to college. And it was kids, the kids said after, when they would go away to college, they, you know, some of the kids didn't even know how to do their own laundry. So it was sort of a nuisance for me because there was always somebody's clothes in the dryer, you know. But the Rockers boys that was in Joe's class got a big kick out of his pink underwear in the gym class. And then they would start working at Hoda's company and during the summer and holidays. And Bill would put their paychecks in the bank for them. And by the time they went to college, they had money to live on. Mm. Oh, by the way, by the time we were through with college, we had dealt with 13 colleges. Mm. And Bill put them through without any help. You know, all our kids went through private schools. I mean, that was a good amount that mm-hmm. it was really neat that he could do that. We were really blessed. One summer when Vince was in college and working at the warehouse, he would go out and with his friends at night and get up late in the morning, and Bill come to work late, and Bill says, but started getting after him. He said, you know, you have to set an example. He said, you're my son. And Bill is running the company. And so Vince kept doing it. And one morning, Bill went in and said, Vince, you're fired. And he says, you have to go to work someplace else. So Vince spent the rest of the summer cutting grass and mowing grass. And he says that was the best lesson he ever learned. To this day, he's telling the grandkids about it, trying to make them, you know, be responsible. Mm-hmm. And it really did a good job on Vince. Lindy said that one of her boyfriends courted her in the laundry room because I used to have the girls take turns helping me in the laundry room. You know, the laundry was the worst job. It was a big job because when we changed sheets, there were 24 sheets, you know, there were 13 of us, and especially the boys, they always had dirty clothes, and the socks were awful. And finally, I just bought a whole dozens of tube socks, and I would take them out of the dryer and just throw them into the laundry basket. And they didn't even match them or anything. And the boys would come down in the morning carrying their shoes, and they'd take two socks out of the laundry basket, put their shoes and socks on in the kitchen. Except for Joe, every time he walked out the door, he was carrying his shoes and socks. And speaking of Joe, when he played soccer for Rockers, we would go to his games. The Moraskis were friends of ours. They had a son on the same team. And this is when Joe was in, I think he was senior in high school. And he was a senior in high school. Anyway, and when it was cold out, the Moraskis, who had a farm and made elderberry wine from their elderberries, would bring a thermos of elderberry wine. And by the end of the game, we didn't care who it was. But anyway, Joe was playing soccer for Rockerson, and one morning I was doing laundry, and I could not find any towels. And so I went up to Joe's room. There were towels everywhere. And, you know, he was taking a shower before he went to school in the morning. He was taking a shower after he came home from school because they had practice, and he was sometimes he would go someplace, take a shower at night. Mm-hmm. So I hollered at Lindy. I said, Lindy, come here. She was going to Avila at that time and was home between classes. So we went in and we counted 22 towels. I said, no wonder I can't find any towels anywhere. So I never grounded the kids because it also punished me. But I was so upset with Joe. Then when he came home, I said, Joe, you are not going out this next weekend except for your game at PIM Day, because they were playing PIM Day for the, I don't know whether it's playoff or a championship. It was a really important game. And I thought I would be punishing Rockers too, you know. So I said, that's the only night you can go out. Well, it also happened that the football game that weekend was a playoff game, was a really important game. It was on, one was on Friday night, the other one was on Saturday night. So I don't know whether Joe had his friends do it, or whether his friends just did it, but I was getting calls all week long, please let Joe go to the football game. And I said, no, I already told him that he couldn't, and I'm not, you know, and so he has to stay home. So the football game was on Friday night, and the soccer game was on Saturday night. Saturday night, we were in the stands, and they went out to warm up, and Joe came back to the bench, and it was just perfect. He was facing the stands, taking off his sweat top, and some guy from way up at the top of the stands hollered, Otis! And Joe looked up, you know, and everybody was sitting there, and he said, the guy up at the top of the stand says, clean your room! So that was funny. Anyway.
This has been a Voices in Time production. To learn more, call 913-831-0848.